I got a chance to talk with Black Tabby Publishing's Abby Howard and Tony Howard Adias, as well as Sunset Visitors' Remy Siu, to talk about Prove You're Human, the follow-up game to 100 Times Resist from Sunset Visitor, and the first game that Black Tabby Publishing is, well, publishing. Enjoy the conversation.
Hi, I am Abby Howard, co-founder of Black Tabby Games, and now Black Tabby Publishing.
And I'm Tony Howard Arias, and I have the same job titles as my lovely wife.
Yes.
I'm Remy Siu, and I'm the creative director at Sunset Visitor Studios.
Hey, well, I am so excited to talk with y'all. My first question is, how excited are you for the launch of Prove You're Human, or the announcement, not the launch, the announcement of Prove You're Human, both on the Black Tabby side of now being publishers, and Remy, as a follow-up to an audience that has really fallen in love with y'all's work?
I'm pretty excited. I don't know. I assume this is airing after
yes,
announcement goes live. So when you're hearing our voices, we'll either be celebrating harder, because I think it's going to go great.
Yeah. I am nervous for us, but very excited for Remy. I'm just always nervous. So that's just how that is.
I'm always nervous about this stuff. So like,
it's
gonna
go great. 100,000 wish lists in a day. Oh
God, I don't think it will change. I'm always nervous about this stuff, because, you know, like, always very cognizant of being like, okay, yeah, we make narrative games. And but as you said, I think one of the nice things this time is that I think we're excited for the, you know, the people in our Discord, our kind of people who follow us because of 1,000 times, to kind of see what we're up to. So that part is exciting.
And I feel like Remy's job as the creative lead on the game is to maintain a little bit of modesty and humbleness. But as people who are just promoting it, that trailer is awesome.
It looks cool. When he sent it, I was like, oh yeah, this is what we signed, you know?
And let's talk a little bit about that. For those reading this article and listening to this, the focus is an AI who wants a body. Like, that's it's very interesting. And I wanted to ask, one for you, Remy, what were the inspirations of creating this game? Because when I saw the trailer, I was actually reminded of a movie with Steven Yeun and Kristen Stewart called Love Me, where they're satellites floating in space in a dystopian world trying to figure out how to be human in the process. But that was really the only other piece, the only other narrative that I could really think of that was coming towards an AI seeking humanity in a very personal way, not under a directive. So what were your inspirations for that? And on the publishing side, what drew you to picking this game as your first title publishing? So
yeah, no, I think for us, we're always trying to have our heads up when we're making things, and especially after 1,000 times was finishing, you know, it was like in 2024. Mm-hmm. And so when we were starting to ideate what we might do next, and we looked up and we saw the landscape of things. We saw kind of what was happening, and even to a lesser extent than now. So that was, I think it was our primary influence, was just the world around us, and trying to be very porous with it and let it into the writer's room. You know, I think 1,000 times has a lot of that. And I think that was kind of the initial impetus. But I think for us too, there's a lot of classical, like a huge tradition of classical science fiction that talks about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing that and having engaged with that and kind of looking up in 2024 and feeling strange, it's, it was an interesting tension I think we wanted to explore.
Yeah.
You know, what does it mean to tell an artificial intelligence story in 2026?
Yeah.
What does it mean to see a lot of these things that were previously speculative start to actualize and be different than what we thought it would, how it would play out. And, you know, in a thousand times, a lot of that was around pandemic things. And a lot of the affect, and for us, it was really focusing on the affect of how this was different than what we thought it would be.
Yeah.
And I think that's still a kind of guiding light for us, is what is the affect and human experience of living in 2026 for it to be so different than what we thought it would be.
Yeah.
And for our end, kind of like why this game is the first one. So A Thousand Times Resist. Yeah. Great game. Groundbreaking. Amazing. You're presented with an opportunity where you find out they're trying to make their next game and you have the money to fund that. I mean, isn't that it? Isn't that the whole thing? Like, shouldn't we look at artists with fantastic track records who are making groundbreaking media and then just like say, well, whatever it is you want to do, I want to see it. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
I want to make sure it is like your vision undiluted. So
God, and like, let's not make someone like Remy jump through the hoops of like pitching a game to traditional publishers, where it's a long process. I feel like if you have a really tight scenario where publishers are immediately interested in something, just the back and forth and everything else, it takes minimum, I don't know, 4 months to get something signed and started. Usually longer.
And that's time that you're paying your employees. It's time you're not really sure when something is going to be able to get started. So that's difficult when you have like smaller budget games in general, especially. Yeah. So,
and I think there's also something really exciting from the publishing angle of getting to jump in and be part of discussions from the very beginning of a project, where something I think unique to the approach that we're trying is taking on a role similar to, say, an editor at like a traditional book publishing house.
Yeah.
Or to reference Remy's performing arts background, a dramaturge, where it's like we're people who, you know, are connected to the project, but we're sitting outside of it. So we can offer our own perspectives and thoughts and questions as fellow creatives, and, you know, give that extra avenue of discovery while still leaving all of the core creative responsibilities to, you know, a team that has already gotten so many flowers that we know that we can trust to do a good job.
There's some, the way that that's framed, I think, is really interesting, because I'm noticing I do film as well as video games as a critic. And one of the things that I think has become an increasing conversation, or has been a standard conversation in film and seems to be becoming an increasing conversation in games, is the idea of studio interference and the impact on creativity that happens with that. And hearing you all express the idea of not necessarily be directly involved in the creative process, but being a part of a feedback loop is very different from what we're seeing a lot of, whether it is indie devs who end up going with larger publishers after their first game, or people just trying to create games already at AAA studios, maintaining that creative freedom. And so I wanted to talk or ask very specifically, I think while we seem to be in a media landscape where if you want to have funding, if you want to make it far, you have to fit somebody's cookie cutter. It doesn't matter what it is, but you have to fit somebody's cookie cutter. With the establishment of Black Tabby Games as a publisher, the freedom that it seems just from this conversation that's going into that seems really invaluable. Can you all speak to the importance of funding and fueling creativity, and then also Remy on your side, maintaining those boundaries between your creativity and the feedback loop that a publisher is involved in. I hope that made
Yeah.
sense. I know that was very
No,
long.
that made perfect
For
sense. And
sure.
I would say that like every aspect of how we approach publishing comes from a position of as developers ourselves, and we're
Yeah.
always going to be 95% developer, 5% publisher. As
Yeah.
developers ourselves, what would we want out of a relationship? What
Yeah.
are ways where like not even necessarily with publishers we've worked with, but you know,
Yeah.
like throughout pitching processes and things, and if you're seeing contracts, what are areas of that that made us chafe and stiffen up, and you know, that felt so constraining that we wouldn't want to do something? And
Yeah.
the thing you were saying about games fitting sort of this, or media fitting
Yeah.
this cookie cutter template of, you know, whatever a given funder wants. Hasn't that been leading to a glut of, if I may be so blunt, bad art?
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of like lists of things and people saying, this is the list of things that you said you wanted, and here you go, you get it again. And it's kind of like watered down, it's unoriginal because it is a list of things that somebody decided should be sold. And I think a
Yeah.
big part of like what we are offering kind of is like understanding how to integrate sort of the idea of trying to get people interested in something. Like, to marketing is what it is, but that sounds so businessy. But at the same time, it's like marketing being something that can start the conversation of a piece of art, which is, I think, kind of what we see art as, is like a very complicated conversation. One person kind of making something and showing it to somebody else and saying, do you understand? But it's really complicated, so you can't just say it in a sentence. So how do you then start that conversation with a sentence? So that is kind of like part of what we do, and understanding then when to do that and when to not, when to push it all the way to, like, I would say pushing it all the way to, here is a list of terms. Do you like these terms? I think is too, I mean, you're just kind of stripping it bare of the things that actually make it interesting, because a list of terms also doesn't tell me what something is. Like those little book publishing things where it's just like, oh, it's got queer romance. And it's like, but what do they do in the book? Like, that's great, but what do they do? So, yeah. And I think kind of stripping it down like that, it reduces it as well. So,
Yeah, and like pointing at a thousand times resist yet again. People love that game. It's been building like I don't know, like a snowball effect of cult support and
yeah.
following since its release. And I think one of the things that's so special about it is that it almost like defies categorization.
Yeah.
And that's in the very definition of a work being groundbreaking. And you can like point to, you know, I'm sure a laundry list of influences, be they subtle, be they big or small. But fundamentally, it's something where someone finishes that and they're like, I want another game like this.
Yeah.
I would struggle to come up with a recommendation. And then the recommendation I would come up with would maybe be something like, What Remains of Edith Finch, which also kind of defies
Yeah.
categorization and is thematically very different, and like the language that it uses is very different.
Yeah.
So again, it's just like, how do you, if you're placing heavy constraints on like the structure of things
To
on
make
the
sure that
artist you're working
it's
with, how do you
familiar to
get that
people.
again?
Yeah.
You don't want it to necessarily be familiar to people. And so, kind of figuring out where those boundaries are is a big part of what we are doing. And I feel because we have had to do this for ourselves before, of just kind of integrating something where you make sure people still engage with it, but you also don't make it where it's easily categorized as something simple.
Over to you, Remy.
No, yeah, I think it's been a really interesting process, and in such that in terms of kind of like, you know, the writer's room is always something that's relatively closed doors. And you know, the way that things come in to the writer's room, or the way that things leave or come in from the writer's room is often say, you know, we're struggling with something, and we need a separate set of eyes. We do go over and talk to Tony and Abby and are like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, And the dramaturgy aspect of it is that they haven't just spent 7 hours talking about it, and they're like kind of caught up, in a logic yarn ball of something, and so they have kind of some clarity on being able to kind of continue jamming and devising on it, and then that returns to the writer's room, and then that may spark something else and something new. It may not be the solution, but it may be a new avenue in which to kind of break open something. So I think that's kind of an interesting. I also think that that's something that's really nice, because what happens is that perhaps Tony and Abby are very familiar with the game at this point, in a way that I think when it comes to us actually shifting gears a little bit and then marketing it, perhaps, that becomes an extension of a lot of the discussions that we've had in the writer's room, and then also in general. And so that's kind of a one of these nice outcomes of it.
Yeah, and this actually speaks to something, not to get too focused on marketing in this conversation, but it really is like an important part of the dynamic of making any game.
Yeah, I mean, there are what, 13,000 games released a year, so
Yeah,
if you want to be heard.
and I think that like you don't understand how important this is until you have to share your own work and you maybe get someone who's trying to help you with it, but like it is so hard for somebody who is disconnected from a project to talk about it at all, to sell it at all, to pitch it at all, with the exception of like when the work is already done and out in the world, word of mouth is incredible. But like in terms of formulating like descriptions, pitches, it's like the more distance you have, the harder it
And
gets.
sometimes the closer you are, it also becomes really hard to be like, well, how do I summarize this thing?
But it's this thing where it's like I would say to most indie developers, aspiring or established, like the best advocate you'll have for your game, the best marketer, the best pitcher, it's always going to be you. And like I still think that that's true of like the core creative team at Sunset Visitor, because they are so much more immersed in this than we are. But like at least checking in early on and getting to have these conversations puts us in a position where like we can jam on that with them. And I again, what we'll see by the time this article goes out or this conversation airs, if I'm eating my invisible hat or not. But like I think the announcement's going to go well, and I think it's at least in part, mostly because the team at Sunset Visitor is so good at what they do, but it's at least in part because of the collaboration here.
So my next question, which that was a fantastic answer, I do just want to say, I think because I think that's a part of the process that a lot of players, a lot of critics may not necessarily know intricately, like what the relationship is and how each one is different depending on the publisher and the dev. So thank you for kind of pulling that curtain back on that. For Remy, my next question is, you mentioned at the top of our conversation about kind of the long history of sci-fi and artificial intelligence and the different ways that we've engaged with it. So it is one of those things where when I saw the trailer, right, just from the long line, I thought, oh, is this going to be maybe something we've gotten before, right? But there's an intimacy in like the haunting nature of the trailer that I think really kind of pulled me back, because there's a line in it that the AI says about not taking her future body for granted. And I wanted to ask, the foundation of sci-fi is a lot of people think it's the tech. It's not. It's the humanity and the line between the tech and that. So I wanted to ask, what shaped the decision for the atmosphere of the trailer, which is, as I said, both intimate and haunting, and also what can players expect from the narrative and seeing those two concepts hit each other, especially through the eyes of something that is not human but deeply wants to be.
Well, those are all good questions. Okay, the first part of the question, how do we kind of come to it? And I think this is, it's always, especially for us, because the writer's room is a very organic place where a lot of things just kind of, a lot of the process is us breaking something open. And so it's hard to always go back and understand exactly where it was happening, but often it's like born out of trying to define this character that you're talking about, who's speaking the trailer, the artificial intelligence, Mesa. We were largely trying to understand how this artificial intelligence character would be very different from its predecessors, right? Because of, as we said, there's so much work about AI. And so it really involves us jamming a lot, jamming until we're writing all kinds of different types of imaginary scenes. We're writing all kinds of different types of material until we start to find something that feels really good and has in it an inherent tension. And I think, as you kind of felt, perhaps the tension here is that this is more achingly intimate than we were expecting. So many artificial intelligence characters are often take a distance, right? And kind of have that, to not go too far into it. They have a degree of objectivity, right? Because, and I think we wanted to disarm that a little bit and subvert it for sure. And in terms of what we want the players to feel, we definitely want them to feel unsettled and have that expectation of, I mean, we kind of want them to feel what you felt. And I think that will continue throughout the game, where there is, again, personhood assigned to artificial intelligence is something that that science fiction has tackled a lot. But I think one of the nice things about, the medium that we're working in is that it becomes even more intimate when it comes to you interacting with an entity, and that this entity truly believes what they say. So,
It
yeah.
oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, no, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say it kind of there's an element to it. Like my favorite types of ghost stories often have that yearning element where it's like, is this good? Is this bad? What happens once the yearning has been fulfilled? Should it be fulfilled? So that was 100%. It was that line about not taking a body for granted that I started like, I was like, oh, I'm a little bit more worried about what's happening here.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, there's so many moments in the writer's room where we've been knocking around this core premise. And finding this place where it's, sorry, I don't have a conclusion here. I'm just
Yeah,
thinking
no,
about
you're
it
fine. You're
from what you said.
fine. Yeah, no, 100%. So I know we're almost at time. So my last question.
We can go as like
Okay.
longer if
Yeah,
you
we
want.
have
It's
been in
totally
parts
fine.
about.
This is the last thing on the calendar
Oh,
for the day.
yay! Thank you.
Also, you have like the rare correct opinion on ghosts are like
Oh,
locked in
right.
right
Well,
now.
this is the thing, like, one of the things that we looked at when, okay, now, yeah, it's becoming clear in my mind.
Good.
It's solidifying. One of the many things that we looked at when we were starting to work on this, or really kind of hone in on it, is possession stories. And so that is, so that kind of instinct on the ghost story stuff really aligns, I think.
See, and like going back to what we were talking about earlier with like the distance that Abby and I have from the project, I didn't know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's no, that, honestly, because I'm a big horror person. I'm a big genre person, I think is the best way to describe me. Is it, I don't need Oscar bait. I need horror, action, and sci-fi. That's what I want in my life. But there are so many elements where the act of yearning and the kind of like the two paths that you take from it, you either find fulfillment and intimacy and love, or you find resentment and intimacy and rage or hate, and angst is in that middle section. So I can't wait to play the game just because that trailer got my brain spinning. So really good job, whoever
Thank
was in charge of editing it, and obviously like from the marketing angle, I lost. There's going to be a follow-up. Okay, I'll come back to it. But usually the question I like asking people, whether it is an actor, a filmmaker, a game dev, a publisher, is an idea about what we make. So I'm a firm believer that when we make something, when we create something as small or as big as it is, we put so much of who we are into it. We bury ourselves in it in whatever piece of the process. But I'm also a big believer that it doesn't leave us hollow. So whatever we put in, it feeds us back. It fills our cup in that way. So I wanted to ask Remy, what have you learned through the development process for this game? And Abby and Tony, what have you all learned through the process of becoming publishers on this title about yourselves?
Yeah, because we're in the active process of making this specific work, it's hard to say yet what we've learned. That being said, so much of our focus is about having a continuity of practice, and I think that extends back even before starting the company, because as you say, you're right in. If you are an artist with a healthy practice, what you'll hopefully find is that every work does leave you with more new questions, and you get to kind of follow those new questions into new work. And so, a lot of because my background is in music, my brain is very abstract and formal. Like, I'm very interested in abstract and formal things. I think this game gets to tackle a lot of abstract and formal things that kind of came out of a thousand times that I'm really excited to kind of get into. And one of those is those full motion videos and real shot footage as a kind of continuation and continuing question of how we can use those in storytelling in an interesting way. Yeah, but I would say. Yeah, that's a great way to put it, that we put so much ourselves into these things, but it also kind of returns something. And I think when this work starts to speak to you as you're making it, that's when things get really fun. Do you have an
Yeah, I
answer?
do. I think it's taught me to value patience and faith. Not necessarily that, I haven't valued these things before, but I think that so much of the publishing process for us has been about sitting back and letting a talented team work through ideas and concepts at their own pace, and sometimes, flip something on its head or change something entirely. I want to say that, like, once we signed Sunset Visitor, like the first 4 or 5 times we did like a bi-weekly check-in to be like, what's going on? What are you stuck on? How are things looking right now? It was like the entire game had changed and like completely from a couple weeks ago or before that from the initial pitch. And like there's obviously like a clear consistent through line, but what's been so cool about this is like every time this idea transformed, it's like gotten more interesting,
yeah,
more profound. And all of this culminated in Remy showing us the trailer, which will be out by the time people are engaging with this, which was like a mind-blowingly good trailer, in my humble opinion. And like, I don't know, it was just like approaching this with just like patience and letting the team explore an idea and sometimes change something entirely. And then at the end of that process, getting something so amazing out of it has been intensely rewarding. Abby, it's your turn now.
Mine just feels so much more, I don't know, self-centered than everyone else's. I feel I have learned a confidence, because I have to be confident in the decisions that we are currently making. And I have learned a confidence in other people as well, to kind of feel confident in those decisions, which then bleeds over into feeling confidence for other people, kind of bolstering all of this, I suppose. So it's not just my project anymore. I can't just be like self-deprecating all the time and say,
yeah, no, you have to be just a hype woman, right?
I have to be like, yes, this is amazing. And of course,
but it is amazing.
Find it if it wasn't, because I also feel a huge thing that we've always done as a studio, and what I have always done in my career, is making quick decisions.
Yeah.
If I have a feeling immediately upon seeing something, this is cool, this feels good to me, to go with that gut instinct and to follow that, instead of doubting it and constantly asking myself, like, well, but what are all of the bad things that can happen because of this? At a certain point, you just have to let go of all of those and just say, that doesn't matter, because my instinct here is telling me to do this, and see what happens. If it fails, it fails. And hopefully it doesn't fail too hard. So
this one isn't going to fail.
This one is not going to fail. That confidence, I really feel it.
There are things that are worth hemming and hawing over, and there's things that are worth confidently seizing. Yeah. And one of the things that we're doing is a publisher, and this almost feels like cheating, but you know, we only have so much time that we can dedicate to publishing, so we're choosing to work pretty much exclusively with pre-established studios that like we are so comfortable putting our full trust and faith into.
And who don't need us to hire an entire staff to help them. <which helps. laughs> Because that is how we keep things kind of small and manageable.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for your time today.
Yeah,
that
thank
was
you.
All
thank
I
you.
Had.
Thank you.